What's that? It's the sound of the future.
I know!
Hey everyone, this is John.
This is Warius.
And this is Ryan.
And this is a Super Nintendo. No, it is not. It is the Nintendo 64.
The first one.
The best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. And like the name implies, we're going to talk about Nintendo 64 games as they came out sort of semi-chronologically 21 years ago. That would put us at September of 1996, which is the launch month.
Is that
going to
be our new intro?
Yeah, that's it.
That Mario song?
Yeah, that's it right there.
There's not like a... What did we use in the last one? In Super Nintendo?
Zelda.
Oh.
Yeah, it was the Zelda.
Yeah, it was
the main screen.
You can tell I listened to the show.
Yeah, you freaking downloader right here.
We started editing you out, by the way. We just started and then you didn't notice.
And so it's just odd bits of silence right
now?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, well...
So, the Nintendo 64 is a new piece of hardware that Nintendo launched in September of 1996 in North America.
So set the scene.
This is while we focus up. We are actually not going to get into like the minutia of the history of the launch of the Nintendo 64. It is actually probably one of the like first well-chronicled console launches in video game history. The NES is kind of muddy, Super Nintendo the same way, but you know, in 1996, you know, you have the beginning of the internet, you have game media that is much more widespread than it was in 1991 and 1985. So there are a lot of resources out there. If you want to know about the launch...
And the Nintendo magazine is peaking.
Right, yes. Yes, it's got Nintendo Power.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so that was a great magazine.
I miss it. I miss it sometimes.
It had like cheat codes and stuff on the back.
Maps and guides and stuff, yeah.
Oh, yeah, so good.
So if you want to know about the launch of the Nintendo 64, there are tons of resources. Like, just there's like YouTube videos, like half hour things dedicated to the build up and the launch of this thing. So they're out there. So we're not going to repeat any of it here. We are going to, like, if you guys have personal stories about the launch of the Nintendo 64, Wes, you shared a little bit on a previous show, like you got one for Christmas.
Yeah, my parents did a really sneaky thing where they're like, here's this, and it's like GoldenEye for the N64. Like, here's this one. Oh, it's Bomberman. Mom, Dad, I have a Super Nintendo, not a Nintendo 64. And then,
Mom,
you know,
Dad, I'm a piece of shit. I'm ungrateful.
And then, you know, they brought out the big gift out of the bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
And had a bow on it. Like, you know the rules. The ones with the bows are last. That was a house rule.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was a Nintendo 64, and I proceed to shit myself right there.
So clearly it wasn't.
It sounds like
here.
The McAllister household over there. It sounds like you guys had a really, really sweet upbringing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah.
What a tremendous Home Alone reference. Clearly it wasn't during the launch year because GoldenEye was already out. And also, which is fine. I didn't get one at launch either. I got one probably 2 or 3 years into the life cycle of the Nintendo 64.
With the Blockbuster money, or...
No, I actually did not have a job in 1998.
How old were you then?
I was like 13.
All right, never mind.
So, but you know, I was like able to save some money from birthdays and shit to get one, as well as, I think I got it with Ocarina of Time. And for the longest time, like the games I owned were like Ocarina of Time, Mario 64, and Smash Brothers.
Which is fine. I mean, I feel like those are your... Those are your volume...
Yeah.
Gameplay.
That's the that's the pantheon right there.
Yeah.
I did eventually get like GoldenEye and Perfect Dark, but you know, to this day I still don't have a very big collection of N64 games. It's probably like my smallest collection of games. Because I actually do not own a hard copy of Majora's Mask. I borrowed yours, Wes. That's how I originally played it.
I don't even know what happened to mine.
Weird. That was cool. It was a gold cartridge. It's a shame that it's missing.
I remember getting that. See, that's another memory. I remember getting Majora's Mask, pointing it in and turning on my N64 and going, this shit doesn't work. You need to give us more money. I went, fuck!
Oh,
you need
the
to get
expansion.
That, you need to get that stupid thing to put in the front of the stupid N64 in order to run the stupid thing. And
Yeah, there were there were like one or two little modular things that the Nintendo 64 did, like with that like RAM expansion.
Yep. And it didn't seem like that big of a jump from Ocarina. So I'm like, why do I need this thing?
Well, it, you know, we'll get to Majora's Mask in a few years, but yeah. It does run a little bit smoother. But neither here nor there at this point. There are also, like, things with the controller, like the transfer pack that you put in the back to, like, transfer your Pokemon from Pokemon Stadium, or from your versions of, like, Red Blue into Pokemon Stadium.
That's the whole purpose of that, essentially. I think there was something else you could do with it, but that essentially was the reason to buy one.
I think that there is a way you can play Pokemon Gold and Silver on your television using the transfer pack.
You can, through Pokemon Stadium.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, no, like, I mean, actually, like, display Gold, Silver. Yeah. Oh, that's
through
just
Pokemon Stadium.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, and the Rumble Pack. That was the other big thing that is sort of modular about the hardware. Now you plugged, of course, into your...
And now your controller shakes.
Yeah. Out of control, wildly. your huge, unwieldy controller, which... I mean, a lot of Nintendo systems are designed around your input device, your controller. This one, I don't know what they were thinking.
Maybe they weren't.
Yeah, maybe. They're like, well, we want to put an analog stick. Where do you put it? Ah, right in the middle there. Just right where your thumbs can't reach. There's one guy who works on Nintendo who has giant hands. But, I mean, the analog stick was, like, the big innovation here. Because it was the first time that it had ever been used, like, really successfully in a home console. And it was there day one. Like, the PlayStation 1 did eventually get controllers with analog control. But it was a big feature from day one. And, you know, on day two, all those analog sticks broke. Because, again, in a very un-Nintendo fashion... Those analog sticks are very flimsy.
Yeah.
They do not hold up, especially, you know, when a bunch of kids are using it.
And the design of them weren't great. I mean, after, like, 30 minutes playing the game, your thumb's just killing you.
Yeah, yeah. It's not...
killing
you. It's not in a comfortable position. You have to find, like, these weird ways, like, asymmetrical ways to hold the controller just because of the position. Oh, they have the Z trigger.
Oh, no. You just hold it, you know, you just grab the middle one, and you grab the right one.
Totally ignore the D-pad forever.
Yeah, ignore the D-pad. Nothing ever used that thing anyways.
Maybe Bomberman. There are probably some 2D games that use the D-pad.
I mean, I remember as a kid going, why do I even have this thing? Like, the D-pad. I'm like, why is this even fucking there?
Well, we'll get to that. But in 64, you use your D-pad for, like, the camera movements, don't you?
There's the D-pad on the left, and then there's the C
arrow directionals.
Which is kind of like a precursor to a second analog stick. I'm sure we'll come across a game at some point that will use the D-pad in some way. The other big thing with the Nintendo 64 was that, of course, there's this transition away from 2D games. A lot of things were polygonal, and that's the way Nintendo wanted it. And it's also very un-Nintendo in this fashion, where they are trying to be at the forefront in some ways with this tech. There are some things where they're a bit behind and backwards. They decided to use cartridges instead of optical discs. The amount of RAM in their system actually had to be upgraded, like we talked about before, because I was a little bit behind.
Because I wanted to play Microsoft.
Man, I remember as a kid not able to figure out what the fuck I was supposed to do in Turok.
it's pretty unforgettable, because I got it. By the way, you were telling me when you guys got yours.
Oh, yeah.
I got mine in 2017.
Nice. So you're going through this for the first time.
Yeah, it's great. Wonderful. I mean, it's great. It's not like it's the first time I've ever played an N64 in my life. I mean, I've been over to friends' houses where they had the games. Like, I had an uncle, aunt and uncle, and they had...
Who worked at Nintendo, right?
No, they had a 64, and they played games, and I was like, oh, this is kind of fun, but... I mean, my whole... when I was buying consoles... I was way out of order, because the thing that I got next after a Super Nintendo, after riding a Super Nintendo for like a fucking decade, was a Dreamcast.
Mm-hmm.
Which is great, actually great.
Yeah.
And in a totally different way, a different reason.
I wish it was better.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm okay.
Well,
with
maybe
it.
If I couldn't burn the entire catalog of games on this
CD. Right, the Dreamcast is great, because you can play all the PlayStation 1 games on it.
And maybe that's what N64 got right, is, you know, the same way they did with the GameCube discs, where it's like, you just simply can't pirate. It's just impossible to pirate.
Well, you know, they have this system that is at the forefront of graphics tech at the time, which is very unintended, because usually they're using old technology in different ways. Game Boys were made out of old calculators, outdated calculators. And they're finding ways to create games out of this old tech so they can do it on the cheap. Now they have this system that is using very expensive cartridges that is more expensive to develop for because of the tech they're using in it, and that you have to expand the RAM because it's just too damn slow. Hmm. So you have this natural migration away from Nintendo system onto the thing that's easier to develop for, cheaper to develop for, and cheaper to ship your games onto.
Hmm.
A lot of this stuff that they're doing, like trying to be at the forefront of certain parts of tech, is a natural evolution to what happened with the Super Nintendo and the console wars with the Sega Genesis.
Hmm.
You have this like very heated rivalry almost up to the very end, where I think Nintendo comes out to be the clear winner. But you have this heated rivalry where Sega is talking all about like their tech and like, look at how fast Sonic is running and look at all these colors and isn't this amazing? And the Super Nintendo, a powerful system in its own right, you know, when you do like a back-to-back comparison with just like Mario World and Sonic does look pretty impressive just at the speed he moves. We can have a serious discussion about what is the better designed game. It will be very short because no one thinks it's Sonic. But the out of
but
like
he moves
that,
so
that's what
fast.
Yeah, he sure does. But watch out, he's gonna kill himself. But then you have Nintendo going, okay, we don't want to get caught behind in this technological arms race, and you have systems that launch previous to the Nintendo 64 in the PlayStation and the Sega Saturn that are not as powerful in some ways as the Nintendo 64, but are easier to develop for. And then even like the Sega Saturn did not do well in North America, but the Sega Saturn ends up, I believe, outselling the Nintendo 64 in Japan in their home market.
Huh. I'm saying something, man.
Yeah, and you can see like a lot of
well, you see like a lot of major players emerge from this too. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like this weird. It's strange that Nintendo is still around because they're the one that kind of bridges the gap between, you know, like companies like Atari and
yeah.
ones that manufacturing for arcades, and then the emergence of the home console. Like, who would have thought that freaking Microsoft and Sony would really be the ones that would step in and
yeah,
in large scale and in mass, at least in the United States, own it.
It does show a. What's the word I'm looking for? Scrappiness, I suppose.
resilience.
Yes, yes, thank you. About even when they have things that are massive failures, the Virtual Boy, the GameCube, not really a massive failure, but something that underperformed, the Wii U.
Mm-hmm.
Things that just do not do well for them. And like, Nintendo 64.
But then
Nintendo
they make
64,
a DS or they make a Super
mm-hmm.
Nintendo, like consoles that... They get far more mileage than they should out of.
And there was a natural decline to how well their hardware performs. Like the NES sells, I don't know, like 60 million units or something like that, has 90% of the video game market share. Super Nintendo doesn't sell as well as the NES.
Mm-hmm.
Nintendo 64 doesn't sell as well as the Super Nintendo. And then the GameCube sort of caps off that decline. And then you have the Wii, which goes on to become one of the best-selling systems of all time. And then you know the Wii U. But there is a natural ebb and flow, but no matter what really happens with their performance of their hardware, they seem to just manage, like, okay, well, blow it all up, hit the reset button, let's try again.
Mm-hmm.
But I forget where we were going with this.
I mean, the Wii U's fault really wasn't the system. It was really, like, the catalog, really.
Well, it was, there is no one thing that is why the Wii U failed. The Wii U was... this perfect storm of failures and missteps that was started with the hardware design, the hardware naming, the marketing, the lack of third-party support, and everything just kind of fed into each other and snowballed out of control. Because if you're not selling hardware, you're not going to get companies to make your games. If you can't get companies to make games for your system, you're not going to sell hardware. And you end up in this paradox.
Oh, did you guys read that article that I sent you on Hangouts by any chance? About Bethesda and Nintendo?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
How they're best friends now.
I didn't read some of that. Yeah, they're BFFs. Yes, that's what it seems. Like,
isn't it weird? Like, Bethesda is bringing, like, these major games to the Nintendo Switch. Capcom, nowhere to be found. Just tumbleweed.
All the memeing that's going on with the subreddit for Nintendo is basically around that same thing. Where
I
sort
actually
of, like,
started a Bethesda game the other day. One I never played before. Wolfenstein.
Oh, yeah.
The new one?
There's a sequel.
No, the old
out.
One.
Oh, nice.
Well, the one on the PS4.
Well,
new order.
The new one's not coming out till, what, October?
Yeah.
I have no idea what's going on. Apparently, Nazis are bad guys.
Nazis have always been bad guys.
Yeah.
And I'm this dude. And
that thing you were doing with the tiki torches, like, that's that was all wrong. I know. we tried to tell you that you shouldn't have been there doing that.
Oh, Wes, God. If someone
Damn.
Wants to
no,
get
no,
you
no, no, we're not even joking about that. I want nothing to
you
do with that.
You got caught
joke.
Up in a moment, and you were just happy to be part of
really
something.
Drunk.
But Ryan, much like you, my
you
first...
You told me you were going to be there, and of course you weren't.
Yeah.
My experience with the Nintendo 64 didn't start when I bought it. It started with, you know, playing at other people's houses. The first time I played a Nintendo 64 mm-hmm. was actually really close to launch. A friend of mine and had like a party, like a sleepover. I don't know, whatever you do when you're 11, whatever you call those.
Mm-hmm.
He had gotten Nintendo 64, and... Me, my older brother, him, and his buddy were all there. Mm-hmm. And his buddy was playing Mario 64. And we were all really impressed by it. Like, oh, look at where it could go. And we butt-slammed the chain chomp thing and goes free and you get a star.
Mm-hmm.
But for like, I don't know, what probably felt like
Which
hours.
Is now the hardest thing in the world to do.
Right. what felt like hours, his buddy wasn't giving up the controller. And you know, it is 1996. And we are 11 and 12 years old. We're very crass. We use the sort of language that we wouldn't use now.
Go soak your head.
And eventually, our friend says to his buddy, like, give up the controller, you stupid little queer boy. and he still wouldn't do it. So the bottom line is, like, I don't remember any of us ever getting a chance at playing the game because this guy would give up the controller.
But eventually, like, rule number one is, like, you share.
Right.
Everyone gets to play.
Pass it around.
Usually, yeah, if you die, then you pass off the remote. That's the controller. Seems like that's the way to do it.
Well, eventually we, like, started criticizing the way he was playing. Like, no, don't do that. You're doing it wrong. You should be doing this instead. And, like, of course, he was a smartass about it. I was like, I can't do anything. I'm just a stupid little queer boy. So he was a little sleepy about it. And then I fell asleep. Because, you know, they were up all night.
Yeah.
Playing Mario 64.
I remember having a similar experience where I stayed up till like 5 in the morning.
Jeez.
At a sleepover with friends because we were playing Grand Theft Auto. The first Grand Theft Auto.
Oh, gee.
The
okay.
top down.
Yeah.
One,
yeah.
The one that got super popular.
I remember when you got the tank in that thing and it was the greatest thing in the world.
Before Grand Theft Auto 5 became the best selling game of all time.
That's so crazy that it sold so well.
I don't want to live on this planet anymore.
Again, it was the first Grand Theft Auto we were playing. But the cool thing is, in the third Grand Theft Auto, is that if you turn on the low gravity and then you spin the tank cannon around, it'll give you momentum, so you can actually fly using the tank. I would do it all the time. It's really fun.
Oh, that's funny.
Just turn the cannon the other way and just constantly blast it, and then you'll just be going so fast that you can eventually just lift off the ground, and if you keep shooting, you keep going up.
Nice.
And you can use
Is that how I did it? I can't remember. I remember getting on buildings with tanks.
Yeah, that's totally what you can do. That's fun.
And Wes, I'll offer some encouragement here. Like, don't be discouraged that Grand Theft Auto V is the best-selling game of all time. It's okay. Take a look at the highest-grossing movies.
It's not the best. Tetris is the best-selling game of all time.
I think it surpassed it. Anyway, we'll fact-check
that. Last I looked it up on the best-selling games on Wikipedia, I believe it was number one Tetris, number two Minecraft.
This has been, like, super... Anyway, neither here nor there.
I'm saying I'm right.
It is a fun game. It is a fun game. But, I mean,
all I'm saying
people
is
people need to calm down.
Take a look at the list of, like, highest grossing movies of all time and then decide, are any of these the best movies of all time? And the answer is no.
What's on that list?
Because
Reign of Fire didn't do that well.
Right, Reign of Fire.
Reign of Fire was obviously a success in America because America knows what good cinema is.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, all you gotta do is turn to McConaughey and say, hey, grow a beard, shave your head. We'll figure out some movie to put you in.
Yeah.
We don't know what it is yet, but that's where we start.
Yeah.
Anyway, so there were a few launch games for the Nintendo 64, one of which was, of course, Pilotwings, but the one we're going to focus on...
I've been playing that.
Yeah. I actually want to bank that for the next one.
Sure, yeah, that's fine. I mean, I know early on in the life cycle here, they weren't really churning out a ton of games.
Are we banking that?
We're going to have to off-show talk about the entire life cycle of Nintendo 64 and figure out what we're going to bank for when, because it is rather sparse throughout.
Yeah, because, well, I mean, also, we're going to have to do probably big profiles on games that aren't that good. Like,
mm-hmm.
I know I'm bringing up, like, Japanese baseball games. We'll have to rely on the SNES, because there's still a lot of good games coming out on the Super Nintendo.
Yeah,
some of the best-selling games on the console came out.
Yeah.
After the fact.
End of the year and early next year, we'll still have some Super Nintendo shows to do.
So we're going to have to call it the Super Nintendo Show 64.
I think maybe we record separately and do a Super Nintendo show and a Nintendo show 64.
Oh, okay. Mm. Yeah, that's fine.
But, anyway, Super Mario 64, one of the launch games, that's the one we're really focusing on here, came out in North America, of course, on September 29th, 1996.
The day before my birthday.
Oh, yeah.
My birthday would have been September 30 then, as it would be every year.
Indeed. So, developed, of course, by Nintendo EAD, published by Nintendo, directed by Shigeru Miyamoto. You may have heard of him. Takashi Tezuka, who we talked about quite a bit on a Super Nintendo show. He's a very influential developer at Nintendo. And also Yoshiaki Koizumi, who I don't think we've really talked about before. Koizumi is now the guy who is hosting all the Nintendo Directs. And he is also a guy who is very involved in the Super Mario Brothers series. This is his directorial debut. Like, to this point, he has worked on three other games. He was a manual artist in A Link to the Past and an illustrator in Super Mario Kart.
Hmm.
And then in Link's Awakening for the Game Boy, he wrote the script, he designed bosses, and he also did the manual. So he's doing a lot of art for Nintendo at this point, drawn art. And in Super Mario World 2, he was a computer graphics designer. But in Super Mario 64, they took a big leap on him. He was also a 3D animator in that game, but he was one of the directors as well. And he goes on to work in Ocarina of Time doing game design, and Smash Brothers doing some more game design. And then starting with Super Mario Sunshine, he becomes the sort of like director for the Super Mario Brothers series. So he directs Sunshine. He was also an assistant director for Wind Waker, but he directs Donkey Kong Jungle Beat, Super Mario Galaxy, and then he becomes the producer sort of at the helm of the Mario series, produced Super Mario Brothers 2, or sorry, Super Mario Galaxy 2, Mario 3D World, also Super Mario Odyssey. He's a producer on that one as well.
Hmm.
So, he's a pretty big deal over at Nintendo, and like, Super Mario 64, one of like the most important games of all time, probably in the top 10 for just most influential games of all time. Like, this is where he's cutting his teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is his opening act. So, this game, of course, music composed by Koji Kondo, and don't have a producer listed here. This might be before they sort of broke up the producer and the director.
Were you going through directors?
Yeah, directors.
Yeah, it's the same as Shigeru Miyamoto got the director, a director, and the sole producer.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Super Mario 64. I recently got my N64 working again and beat it. I did not collect all 120 stars. I refused.
You slacker.
Yeah.
But you do only need to get 70 stars in order to get to the final boss.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things, there are a bunch of interviews with Miyamoto as well as Tezuka, maybe even a few with Koizumi, about the design of Super Mario 64. One of the most interesting things is, like, this game, they began designing, I believe, in like 1993.
Wow.
So several years before the N64 came out, and really not all that much after Super Mario World comes out, because that was in 1991. So this game, in development for quite some time. One of the things that was really important to them was, of course, making it feel like Mario in 3D. And when you just take a look at the way this game is structured, it's actually quite different from a traditional 2D Mario, where you have your start point and your end point, and that's the goal you're trying to get to.
Yeah.
And that's the level. Whereas in this one, while it still very much feels like Mario in the way you move and the way Mario jumps, you have these arenas that you go into, and there are a number of goals, and it's not even necessarily get to this point. Sometimes it's collect all these things.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's beat this boss. Sometimes it's just get to these different areas around the map. Sometimes it's set the chain chomp free by using a butt slam.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that is the worst.
But one of the most important things they did is, of course, that courtyard in the beginning, where it just lets you run around and get used to the way Mario feels.
Yep, they teach you how to use the camera and everything like that, which is a big aspect of that game. Because the camera is a chore.
Yeah, and it doesn't,
you know, I'm sure
it doesn't get much better.
I'm sure at the time you're pretty much wowed by the fact that you're saying this game
you know, fully rendered in 3D, and it's like, you know, it's a good looking game. So, I mean, I'm sure you would look past navigational stuff like that, because now games have gotten so much better at navigating you in a 3D environment.
Yeah.
And I remember as a kid, you played so many hours of this thing, is you get used to it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I remember it not being as difficult as it is now.
Well, what you're probably thinking of is when we were doing that Jolly Roger Bay level where you have to... Where you get into the sunken ship,
yep.
And then the water drains, and you have to
work through it. Oh, no, I remember that being just as hard, yep.
I actually didn't have too much of a problem with it this time, because you do get used to, after playing it for a little while, you get used to the way Mario moves, and you get used to the way your jumps are going to land. What you never really get used to is how to manipulate that damn camera.
It sucks.
Because there are some times where you can't move it in the direction that you want it to, or you'll move it the direction you want it to, and then it will slowly track back to where it was before. And like, damn it, I'm trying to navigate a narrow bridge here. Stop moving. Just hold still for a second.
Well, it seems like most games that have a fully open 3D world like this where you can move and navigate the camera, they almost always seem to have a trigger button that just mm-hmm. immediately throws the camera right behind your back. So you're yeah. kind of looking over your head. So it's a straight dead-on shot.
Yeah,
and it doesn't seem to have that. It doesn't really seem to have a way that you can kind of just immediately put yourself, and also trail that view as well.
Yeah.
You start moving around, the camera's going to do stuff, and it's oftentimes doing things you don't want it to do.
Yeah, and that's something that they'll perfect with Ocarina of Time. But to this point, like, in order to get that camera back behind you, you have to go through this roundabout way of, like, going into a closer view, or sometimes, you know, first-person view, and then zooming back out.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, if your camera can't physically be in that position, it will knock you out of it.
Yeah.
But...
Well, also, this adds a lot to, you know, the perceived learning curve of the game. I mean, it's like you throw a controller for Super Mario World in front of somebody, and you're just like, well, go right, run and jump, figure things out. And this, it's sort of like there needs to be a tutorial on how to actually just position the camera to where you can optimally move your character in a 3D world where there's a lot of just constant things that can not just kill you, but frustrate you. Where it's like you've got a really narrow walkway to get across, and you don't have a way to basically just position yourself straight forward and go. You kind of have to be aware that you're at, you know, some non-right angle, and then navigate the joystick. And by the way, that's probably a good reason for them to have a joystick and not use the actual D-pad, is because, you know, it's supposed to give you a full range of motion and a better ability to direct yourself in one way, but if the camera's not working, you know, in sync with that, then
it just
makes it more difficult.
And like I was saying, you do eventually get used to the way that things are going to position and how to move through it, but it's always something that you're working around. You're navigating smoothly in spite of the camera. You know, the camera is not cooperative throughout the experience.
Yeah, and it's not like it's this massive liability, it's just a minor inconvenience at times.
Yeah. It can be a liability.
At times, but one of the nice things about the game is if you get frustrated, you can just move on to something else. Like, you're hardly ever going to have to do something.
It's pretty long. Not going to do. You can kind of just, you can tap. They basically create little mini stop gaps where you have to have enough stars to get to the next thing.
Right.
So that's how they're keeping you away from the really difficult and complex content. But, you know, just if you're a completionist, you find the first, you know, handful of maps, you've got a lot more stuff unlocked. That game seems to go pretty quick.
I did try to get stars from every level, just to kind of sample a bit of everything. There are one or two levels where I actually did get every star except for the collect 100 coins star. Mm-hmm. Or
did you get the chain chomp?
I did not do the chain chomp, no. I lied. I did get all six stars in Bomb on Battlefield.
Nice!
But there were certain levels where, mostly the swimming levels, where I'm like, okay, I got 3 stars here. I'm moving on. Let's get out of here. And, you know, some of the there are different ways to get stars rather than just entering levels. You can also, there are also, like, bonus areas, like secret stars, where you jump into a rando painting in Peach's room.
Every
level's like
got
level.
the coins, right?
The collect 100, you're talking about the 8 red coins.
The 8 red coins.
Yeah, they all have the 8 red coins. There's also just 4 or 5 toads scattered throughout the castle who just talk to him and they'll give you one. Like, yes, thank you. I will take that.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. I think you get, I think 4 stars that way. But there's also, like, the stars you can get, like, in the wing cap stage, like, where you get the wing cap, where you get your power up. And then there's one, like, in the... There's a secret star in the Jolly Roger Bay room. Like, before you enter the painting, there's another, like, little alcove that you jump into, and there's, like, a little swimming level where you just collect 8 red coins by swimming around. It's super easy. But, yeah, those are your keys to the gates. Those are how you access the boss fights, and the boss fights will give you the key to open up the next area of the castle. Mm-hmm. One thing that... that surprised me, I didn't remember it being this way, is you use the power-ups surprisingly a few times. Because you have the wing cap, which allows you to fly for a little while.
You have Metal Mario.
Yeah, you got Metal Mario, which makes you invulnerable, but then also allows you to sink in water, which is a way to get a couple stars. And you have Invisible Mario. And Invisible Mario...
Oh, I don't remember that. Oh, no, I do remember that.
They're just like certain things you can walk through when you're invisible. But that's probably the one I use the least. Because there were a couple levels where I had to use Invisible Mario and dash to the other side, and I neither couldn't get the timing right, or I wasn't taking the right route. So after trying a couple times, like, nah, I'll move on. But did you guys have any like favorite levels? Anything standing out to you?
I can't remember a lot of those levels. Just generally those beginning ones.
Mm-hmm. Like Bomb on Battlefield is of course the first one you go to. Yeah. Of Womp's Fortress is another popular one. That one actually was cool. They did a remake in Super Mario Galaxy of that world, which is awesome.
The Big Small World.
Big Small World. I was expecting I would like it a lot more than I did.
Yeah.
Because there were a couple of stars that were pretty easy to get to pretty quickly, but that one also had like the wind.
Yep.
That would throw you off. Yep. And it throws you off the most when you're a giant. Because when you're a giant, you feel invulnerable. And then all of a sudden, you're trying to make a jump. It's like, oh, wait, no, this wind is going to throw you in a direction you don't want to go into. Great. But Big Small World, it's also probably one of, to me at least, one of the like most aesthetically displeasing. Because when you're big, things kind of look normal. And when you are small and the enemies are giant... Everything just looks really barren and empty.
Yeah.
Which I guess that's kind of a natural thing that that's just what happens when you're putting a tiny Mario into a bigger space. But I don't know. I was hoping that I was going to have more fun with that level, but I ended up not. And then you do get the second race with Koopa the Quick in that one, which is probably one of my favorite star in that level.
Mm-hmm.
It's because it's fun to race that turtle, but you know, once it gets you to the star where you like have to just like move to the 5 secret locations, I was like, nah, never mind, I don't need to do this one.
There is also the ice level where you race the penguin.
Yep, and the races I found were a lot easier now than they were before.
Yeah. The only annoying thing about that ice level is that part where you have to carry the stupid penguin. Because it's not difficult, it's not annoying, but the stupid penguin won't shut the fuck up.
And the sound effect.
Oh my god. I found myself at times going, fuck it, I'll go, fuck it, and just throw the thing into oblivion. I was fine with it.
I got quite a few stars.
Through that penguin.
I didn't expect to get that many stars in that snow level. I think it's Snowy Mountain or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
But
it's pretty straightforward. It's a small area.
I got the list right here. Cool Mountain is what it's called. But...
Yeah, I was looking at them too. There's 15 total.
Yeah, 15. Which one did we skip so far? Just in the first batch. Jolly Roger Bay. Yeah. That's where there's the sunken ship.
Mm-hmm.
And the eel that I still have no idea what it is exactly that triggers him to come out of his little hidey hole. And I don't know. I got a couple stars there, and then I kind of tapped out right around where you have to use the cannons in that level, because there's this tiny little ledge that you have to blast to, and if you're slightly off, like, you have to be really precise.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, you know, when I was 13 and had all the time in the world, I just over and over again shot myself onto that ledge.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't do it anymore. After trying 3 or 4 times, like, never mind, I don't need this star to make a game. I got other games to play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got, well, Big Boo's Haunt.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember 2/3 of these levels.
Well, Big Boo's Haunt, I actually end up having a lot of fun with. That's one where it's really easy just to get a bunch of stars quickly. And, you know, there are speed runs of this game where people are, like, doing 100% speed runs in, like, an hour and a half. Which is impressive. But a lot of these stars don't take very long to get. Like, if you know what you're doing, like, even if you don't know what you're doing sometimes, 2-3 minutes and you got one.
So spatially, I guess Big Boo's one's a lot more confined than the other stages.
Yeah, I mean, you got two basic areas. You got your mansion, your haunted mansion. It's got a few rooms in it. And then you have, like, this underground area with this really creepy merry-go-round sort of area. But it's one that I remember not liking it very much then, but I kind of like it now. It's kind of a cool area. Then once you get to the next, you go to the basement. The basement's your second area, and this is where you get the Hazy Maze Cave.
I feel like, by the way, they used a lot of the same naming conventions for Donkey Kong stages.
Yeah.
Dire Docks. Mm-hmm. You know, Lethal Lava Land.
Which Lethal Lava Land, like, despite that it's, like, fire themed, and usually fire in Mario games is very annoying. This is probably one of the ones where I got a bunch of stars. Because like the bully enemies are super annoying because you have to, like, jump on them to bounce them into the lava and they'll do the same thing to you. And Mario's much more vulnerable than they are. But this one, I got, I think, all 6 stars because they had, like, a really great variety of, you know, beat this boss, run across these moving platforms. I think this is where the game's at its best, is where it's asking you to move through things really quickly. Despite, like, the camera issues, they do a really good job of giving you a pretty good margin for error. So even if you kind of miss a jump slightly, you do have a thing where, like, Mario will grab onto a ledge. And a lot of times, if you just kind of speed through things haphazardly, you got a pretty decent chance of pulling it off.
Yeah. Well, it's really cool, too, because it seems like each stage has 6 major achievements for you to get.
Mm-hmm.
And
some of them do repeat, like Wes was saying, like the red coins. There's red coins in every level to collect.
Yep. And different skill sets and different play styles are probably going to gravitate towards different missions better than others, or different objectives. And I don't know. It's kind of cool that none of it's absolutely essential. You just have to, you know, essentially say you can get a C grade before it lets you actually get to the end game.
Yeah, exactly. Shifting Sandland. The really fun thing with Shifting Sandland is that when you actually go inside this pyramid, because it's got some really cool platforming sections. Snowman's Land. After Hazy Maze, Lethal Lava, Shifting Sand, and Dire Docks are in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
And then that gives you access to the second floor, which is Snowman's Land, Wet Dry World, Tall Tall Mountain, and Tiny Huge Island, those 4. And we talked a little bit about Tiny Huge Island already. Tall Tall Mountain probably ended up being my favorite stage.
Yeah.
Because it's very platforming heavy, where you have to work your way up this winding path up a mountain to get to the very top. And of course, things get more narrow as you go. And it's also got, like, those mushroom-looking treetop things in it, which I think is always a really cool aesthetic choice in a Mario game. Well, that one, I think I knocked out all 6 stars without even deviating to another world. That one was a really fun one. And I had completely forgotten that level even existed. And
maybe that's why.
Yeah.
You didn't spend much time on it in the first place.
Yeah, maybe I got frustrated with it the first time around. But I mean, I do have a cleared save file on this cartridge that surprisingly still exists. That battery is still going strong. And I have a cleared save file in my Mario 64 DS cartridge, but I completely forgot this one existed until I actually got into it. I was like, oh yeah, this mountain's cool. Wet Dry World. Wes, do you remember Wet Dry World?
No.
Wet Dry World is the one where, depending on where you enter the painting, it will affect the water level within the stage. So of course, if you enter in the bottom, the water level is very low. If you're up top, the water level is very high. It's actually the second instance in this game where I can think of that where you enter the stage affects how the stage works. So Tiny Huge World actually has 2 paintings that you go into.
They're one you're small, or one you're big.
Yeah. And I couldn't really manipulate it in this cartridge, but in Mario 64 DS, the time on the clock in TikTok clock, like the clock face, what time is shown there will affect how quickly things move in TikTok clock. I don't know if that's the case in the 64 version, because I tried a couple of different like times, but I never noticed a difference.
Huh.
But maybe it was such a minute difference, it wasn't registering anything. But yeah, you know, Wet Dry World, that's also the one where the cannon will blast you. You can use the cannon to blast you like into this grating and take you down, and like there's this little village, like this sub aquatic village underneath. And of course you can affect the water level in there.
You know, with crab people.
No crab people. That would be amazing though. That would be great.
Oh, I did find out what the name of the new South Park video game is.
Fractured But Whole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did not know that. I found that out the other day. I was in GameStop and I was cracking up.
I watched one of the new episodes of the South Park season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, you say that every season.
I want that show to be so good.
It got great reviews. I haven't seen the new episode. I can't vouch for it.
I did not like it.
I mean, I watched one of the older shows again the other day. I haven't watched South Park in forever. It was the episode where everybody's angry because they have tiny penises.
Yeah.
And they measured the penises. The boys. Yeah. That was a funny episode.
Good times. I don't know. I mean,
why I'm such a happy guy.
I've been very cool on that show for quite some time now.
Well, I feel like they kind of were thrown off track because of the election, too. I think that it seemed like for, you know, they were clearly gearing for a certain outcome that didn't ultimately happen. So
yeah.
They're kind of on the fly having to figure out how they're going to write around that.
Sure.
And,
but,
you know, in theory, having this administration should give them as much material as they could want for a lifetime. But
they're
locked into some arcs that I think that they need to play off no matter. Like, they actually have to finish this and make sense of it. Otherwise, they're just throwing it.
I guess I'm kind of hoping that they eventually get back to a point where they're not trying to be super topical. They're just letting their characters be stupid. Like,
Action news.
Do some more sexy action news. Do some more.
Put the kids in a costume and they're going to be hilarious.
Casa Bonita.
Oh, yeah, Casa Bonita.
Oh,
Somalian pirates.
Get the Somalian pirates or have everyone pretend that Eric Cartman is dead.
Accountability Buddy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Or, Accountability Buddy.
Like, that, when they're just fucking around, it seems like they come up with
right.
Some of the best episodes.
Right.
Oh, the fish sticks episode.
Oh, yeah, the Kanye West. Yeah. Carlos Mencia. remember him, kids? I don't know. I feel like when they're trying to be too topical, they just kind of get in the weeds. I don't know.
I want
to like that show so bad, which this is very relevant to Nintendo 64, because
yeah,
that's when South Park was kind of premiering.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
it's also
right.
Like we can tie it in.
Well, they also, like, you know, they were killing Kenny every episode, and it was so funny, and then they're like, we're going to really kill Kenny, and then from that point on, Kenny's dead.
He was dead for like a year.
Yeah. Well, and then that's when they established, like, hey, if we blow up the school one episode, we should keep it blown up.
Mm-hmm.
Just to see how things happen, if we actually have to kind of restrain ourselves to tell a story that is just not that outlandish.
And they did that a couple of times, like when they moved the kids to the fourth grade and they had the new teacher, Miss Chokes on Deck.
Yeah.
and like they like benched Garrison, they got like Adam out of the school. It's like, okay, what happens when his world gets shaken up as well?
Yeah.
And then eventually they work it all back around too. Like everything is back to normal. And then we can just fuck around again. See what else we can change.
That's true.
Anyway. I don't know. I watched the other day YouTube suggested to me like this interview with Trey Parker and Matt Stone on Jimmy Fallon. I was like, oh, Jimmy Fallon. Alright, I'll watch it. And it was like it was.
Same notice that Trey Parker has pretty much let himself go, and Matt Stone is in the best shape of his life.
I did notice that in another thumbnail, but this interview was from 2011 when Book of Mormon was premiering.
Yeah, yeah.
And like they're like talking about Book of Mormon and like the process they're going through to make it. Like they're two really likable dudes.
Yeah.
Like they're just so chill about everything.
Uh-huh.
Just totally willing to like we'll talk about. Know this and that, and go on whatever tangent you feel like.
Yeah, no, they're out of their mind. They do some really funny stuff sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just think of like how ballsy it was that when they were being nominated for an Academy Award for Best Song or Best Original Song from,
for South Park, yeah, for Blame Canada.
They show up, he shows up, Trey Parker is wearing the green dress that Jennifer Lopez
like wore the previous year.
And they took hits of acid. Like, so they're fucking tripping balls. Like, both of them dressed as women. Going to this award show, they're pretty locked. I'm pretty certain it's a lock that they were not going to win.
Right. Well,
and even though they totally deserved it.
Well, yeah, and the like Phil Collins won, and anytime someone brings up the Academy Awards, like how they are nominated for Blame Canada, yeah. Trey Parker just has to mention really despondently that they lost to Phil Collins. Which is hilarious. Like, because I remember like when the movie came out the next season, they had a bunch of references to Phil Collins because they were so bitter about losing him. Like, they were like going sledding down Phil Collins Hill, and it was just like it was a snowy hill with Phil Collins' face on it.
Well, this must have been for Tarzan, right?
I guess. Right, yeah, I think it was that year.
Which, what the fuck? Why is does Phil Collins have anything to do with this, the legend of Tarzan?
Yeah.
Like, how does his music translate at all remotely?
Well, that was like the Disney thing. Like, for like Aladdin and the Lion King, they got like these, like aging pop singers, I guess you could describe them as.
But yeah, like, he's
like,
so like
Elton John to do songs for the Lion King. Because when I think of like Hamlet remake with safari animals, I think Elton John.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It's like you took. I mean, it's like if you needed an 80s time capsule, you would encase Phil Collins in
it. Just be like a vial of his blood.
Yeah, he's just like, he is like the douchey asshole from the 80s that was like this commercial success. I don't think there's a good parallel today for him and what he does. I feel like all of today's pop stars are so young, but it's like Phil Collins was like balding and ugly, and all of his songs are about how like he's, you know, divorced three times or whatever. You know, it's just like, because he calls his albums things like No Jacket Required. Like, what is the most fucking dull album title you can imagine? You know, No Jacket Required. Like, fuck that.
I don't even know what that means. Like, what are you talking about?
Because it's something in the 80s.
When you're sitting on your couch eating potato chips watching the news, No Jacket Required.
No,
is it like,
yeah.
like a dining?
Restaurants.
Like a casual dining?
No, some restaurants would require that. I mean,
sure.
The kind of restaurants that like a douche like Phil Collins would go to. We would have jacket rules where, like, if you didn't.
Oh, you didn't bring a jacket? You could run to one of ours.
Exactly. That's what they would do. That's literally what they would do. They would give you this shitty jacket. It's like you're getting, like, golf. Like borrowed golf clubs at like a golf course because you don't have yours.
Hmm.
I don't know what.
How plebeian.
Phil Collins is a piece of shit.
Fuck Phil Collins. That's what we need to talk about.
Like,
that's relevant to the Nintendo 64.
Oh, this is really escalated.
And because Peter Gabriel was the real genius by Genesis, and then he leaves, and then because the rest of the guys are too dickless to step up and take the reins, they let their fucking drummer Phil Collins take over. And what does he do? He turns them in from being like a prog, an interesting progressive rock band, into being like, let's make the most commercial shit we can make. Let's make it. Let's make some garbage that's gonna make money. Because that's what I want right now is money and hair plugs. I'm done. Sorry.
So the last two levels in Mario 64. Once you get to the attic,
it's
TikTok Clock, which we've mentioned in passing, and Rainbow Ride.
No, these are our last two stages.
Yeah, those are the last two stages. Those are 14 and 15.
Mm-hmm.
Wes, you got any thoughts on TikTok Clock
or Rainbow Ride? I can't even picture them in my head.
TikTok Clock is, of course, you're like in the innards of a clock and there's gears moving around. I actually...
The innards.
But between the two, like Rainbow Ride, that's one where you're on the magic carpets.
I actually remember a lot of these parts.
And you're sort of on these like preset courses throughout the level.
Mm-hmm.
Rainbow Ride, like I remember despising that, like dreading playing any of those levels.
Mm-hmm.
And when I played this game originally, I actually kind of liked it this time around. Like I liked like going on to different sections and like some of the platforming you have to do in like this like gigantic horizontal maze to find some red coins or. Like on like a lot of timed platforming, but I think like they call it the star like tricky triangles or something like that, where you have to like.
Yeah, this is what I was looking up. Yeah,
like that stuff is really cool and requires you to do like some really quick, high paced platforming.
Mm-hmm.
So that stuff was really fun. I think I got one star in TikTok Clock. Yeah. I went in there and I was like, okay, I remember how this one works. This is gonna be fine. I'm gonna get a few stars here.
The pendulum switch star, get a hand.
I got
the names of them.
I got the first one when it came to when.
Oh, the roll into the cage.
When I got Pendulum Switch Star, when I got to that second one, I couldn't figure out what it was supposed to be. I didn't want to look it up, so I was like, never mind, I'm going back to Rainbow Road. I'm going back to Rainbow Ride, not Rainbow Road. That's so, the Mario Kart.
So I guess the DS versions would sometimes give you additional bonuses or additional quests?
There are additional stars in the DS version, yeah, as opposed to 120 in Mario 64, there's 150 in the remake.
Oh, God, that's a lot of extra stars.
Yeah, and you still don't really get much for it.
Well, I was in GameStop the other day. I went to Jimmy John's for a lunch break. I wanted to sub, and I just walked over to GameStop real quick, and I did take a look. Xenoblade Chronicles for the Wii.
They had one?
Still $50.
They actually had a... It was a brand new, or was it used?
No, it was used, but they had one. 50 some bucks.
Yeah.
I was like, yep, awesome. Fantastic. I still got mine, so I'm okay. My Wii is set up, so if I didn't go, all right, let's give this a fourth try to get through this game, I can.
Oh, you started up again?
Nah, I'm thinking about it. I'm in one of my funks where nothing is enjoyable. Right, I started playing the game for a little bit. I go, it's not bad.
Try playing something short. That's what I try to do. When especially when you're about to get into something that's really involved. Like, I find that breaking it up with a bunch of, like, with really short things.
I've been trying to do it with Majora's Mask. Actually, I started a new file, I started playing through it, but so far I've turned it on 3 times. I'm still on my first fresh day cycle after the first 3. And I'm in the temple and everything like that, and I teleported out to do the Blast Mask on day 1. I was able to go through all of that and get halfway through the temple before night of day 1. I go, holy hell, do I know this game? And I teleported out to do save the old lady on day 1. And I just went to a statue and saved and quit. I'm like, that's enough for now. Like,
Are you playing on a virtual console, or do you have
one? On the Wii.
Oh, okay.
I got it on the Wii. So I'm using a Wavebird, and it's on my TV.
Even with, like, Majora's Mask is still a long game. Like, it's not huge. Find something. But yeah, something snappy. You got like a palate cleanser. Like,
I just don't know what.
I mean, I can't even play 60-hour RPGs all the time.
You know what I wanted something to play really badly the other day, but I can't find anything to play it on. I can't, because I don't have a working PS2 anymore. I want to play Devil May Cry 3. I just randomly was like, I feel like playing Devil May Cry. Like, this seems so weird. To the point where the only thing that I found that I could play it on was the PS4. There's now this PlayStation Now, and it's a subscription, but they give you access to like hundreds of games. And you can just pick and choose and play whatever. But it's like $20 a month. And it's on there. So I'm like,
probably cheaper just to pirate it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Final Fantasy IX's on PS4 now.
I have that along with Final Fantasy VII and VIII on my computer through Steam.
Oh, nice.
Good. So I did get all 3 of those.
You know, they just came out with a new Marvel vs. Capcom game?
Yeah, Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite. Yeah. There are no mutants in that game.
That's the thing. Wow. There's no X-Men in it.
Yeah. No X-Men.
That's so weird. It's
a really weird lineup. And I think you get one of the dudes from Devil May Cry. I think.
Probably Dante.
Yeah, probably. Because they did that on an older one.
I think that the lack of mutants in Marvel vs. Capcom might have something to do with licensing, or it might just be them wanting to bolster the popularity.
From what I was reading, that's exactly what they said. It's strange to not have Magneto and Wolverine, because I think there's only been one character that's been in... two characters that's been in every single one of them. Every version, I think there's 6 of them total now. And it's Ryu and Chun-Li. But it was originally Ryu, Chun-Li, Wolverine, and Magneto were in all the games. So...
The streak is broken. It's so weird that they would take those out.
Yeah. In Ultimate, Marvel vs. Capcom 3 is now on discount. And I kind of want to play that. Because this new Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite does not look good. Like, people don't seem to like it, and it looks bad. Doesn't even feel right.
That's a shame. Capcom is having a hard time recently. Like, a really rough time. And they can't seem to do anything right.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Anyway.
Well, they broke up with our boyfriend Nintendo, so...
Yeah.
That's enough of them.
The fallout
Bethesda is the new hot slot.
The fallout for this is not going to be good. Like,
yeah.
Capcom is seriously missing the boat here. Like, they've announced The big three games that they've announced that people are upset they're not coming to Switch are the Disney Afternoon Collection. I don't personally care. Okami HD. They're not coming to Switch. And there's one more. I suppose I should be more informed about this than I am currently right now, because the third one is escaping me entirely. But
is it a Bionic Commando?
No,
it's associated property or something.
It's not Bionic Commando. Yeah. It's another. Oh, it's the Mega Man Legacy Collection. Mega Man Legacy Collection 2. I think it's Mega Man's 6 through 10.
Hmm.
So, you know,
that Okami and Mega Man would do really well on the Switch.
Yeah, and Disney Afternoon Collection might as well, but it's just really strange. Like the first sort of remake or port of Okami was to a Nintendo system. And like the
it's such a good game.
The Mega,
I still have it.
Mega Man games, like aside from Mega Man 7 and 8, all the other Mega Man games in that collection were on Nintendo systems. And their Disney Afternoon Collection games were on Nintendo systems. Mm-hmm. So, and it's not the first time Capcom's done something like that. They ported, like, the Resident Evil remake that was originally on GameCube and Resident Evil Zero that was originally on GameCube. They did HD remakes of those for, I think it was PS3 and Xbox 360, and then brought them over to the 4 and the 1. Or they might have just been on the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox One. But they didn't bring it to any Nintendo system. Like they were originally on Nintendo systems, and they brought their HD remakes to everything but Nintendo systems. Thanks, Capcom! You guys are great.
Professional bridge burners.
Indeed. But anyway, Mario 64. Do you guys have any other parting shots you want to give to Mario 64? We've been going on for a little while here.
How did you feel about the Bowser fights?
I didn't like them.
Nope.
I didn't like, and it's really tough because we talked about like boss fights in Mario before.
Mm-hmm.
They are games that sort of exist in this platforming realm. Everything you're doing involves running and jumping, and what are you doing the boss fights? You just kind of avoid and wait for your opening to jump over their head or jump on their heads 3 times. Like the boss fights are very counter to the mechanics of what you're doing in the rest of the game. And in Mario 64, it's even exponentially greater to that problem, because all you're doing is running around Bowser in a circle, looking for an opening to grab his tail, and then spinning him around and throwing him and hoping that he lands on the spike ball. Because again, you're in this arena, and there are like at compass points, or sometimes like at 6 different points, surrounding this arena are big spike balls. And you need to pick up Bowser and throw him into one. They're hard to see because, like we mentioned before, the camera is not great. And the timing is hard to master as well. It'd probably be the most impressive thing to see like that during a speedrun, to see like a perfect run through of fighting Bowser, because it's really unwieldy and not at all what you want to be doing in the game. Like the Bowser stages themselves, like getting to the Bowser fight's really fun.
Yeah.
Because they're really focused, really acrobatic, snappy areas where you have to do platforming. It's not really an arena, it's a course that you have to run through. Those are probably like the most like 2D Mario levels that they do in Mario 64, because it's a very definite, this is where you start, this is where you end, get to your end point. And there are even like secret stars hidden through there. Like even the Bowser courses have red coins that you have to grab, and you can get a secret star there. I never did any of that. But I actually really liked going through the Bowser stages. Now, if they were just like, hey, you got to the flagpole, and now you knocked Bowser into some lava, well done, that was the end, that would be great. I think the game would be better if you didn't actually fight Bowser.
Yeah. Seems like there's a lot of these, yeah, like you're saying, the secret stars.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. Some of them are item-specific, some you need the wing, metal, vanish cap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, if they did the thing like they did in New Super Mario Bros. Wii, where you're just running through a course and Bowser is chasing you the whole time and like doesn't allow you to backtrack, like that would be fine as well.
Yeah, that was a really good level.
But they kind of bog it down with these fights at the end that aren't fun, they're not interesting. And you do the same one 3 times. Like you fight Bowser 3 times, and each time you're doing the same thing. The last one, he starts like to knock away parts of the stage, so it becomes awkwardly shaped and even tougher to get to those spike balls. And anyway, I don't think it really requires you to have a high skill at anything that's important to the game in order to play these boss fights. But I mean, you can't really argue with the importance of this game in general. They were one of the first to attempt a 3D platforming game. They got so many things so right on their first try. This kind of became the template for how 3D platformers and arena sandbox games were designed even till now.
They gave us Mario wall jumps and triple jumps.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, sure. Wall jumps, dribble, the dive.
Yep.
And do a dive forward, butt stomps.
Mm-hmm. Was there butt stomps in the older ones? I remember
in Yoshi's Island.
Okay.
But not in any of the other Mario games.
Okay.
Backflips, long jumps. Yeah, they added a ton of different mechanics. That's a good point.
Mm-hmm. You do like, I mean, that led to Ocarina where with Link doing all of his different things. Mm-hmm. His jump slashes, his backflips, his side jumps.
Yeah. Well, you know, even then, when we get to Ocarina of Time, they're still trying to figure out how it is that you do those accurate jumps in 3D platformers, which is why in Mario 64, they also have a punch button. Mm-hmm. So you can actually do melee combat against enemies, and most of the time it's just better to avoid enemies altogether.
You can just jump on.
Well, you do have like the shadow you can use to gauge your landing, but they knew from the start that it is going to take some adjustment period for people to
fucking change jump.
Yeah, actually.
Good thing it's always high noon.
Exactly.
And they cast a shadow perfectly.
It's just a perfect round shadow right underneath them.
I'm glad they did that rather than not do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But the goal was to try to create this out, this way of you can engage an enemy without having to fumble around them for 10 seconds trying to stomp on them. No, just punch them in the face, it's fine. And then once you get to Ocarina of Time,
yeah,
you know, when you have more precise combat, they decide to eliminate the problem and just make jumps contextual. Like, hey, you're going to jump off this ledge, just run toward it. It's fine. You'll be okay.
Yeah. So what about enemies? I'm noticing that there's a lot of enemies in this game that I have never heard of, and I don't think they're being reused. It's weird, because like...
Quiz me.
Sure. Well, I mean, like, returning enemies, of course. You've got Koopas.
Goombas.
Bullet Bills.
Swamps.
Goombas, Fly Guys.
Boo.
Boo.
The big stupid fish.
Even piranha plants. Yeah, all that shit's the same. Amps.
Which one are amps? I don't remember that one.
Amps, they look like little frozen ice things. Is that right?
Oh,
what about bookends? Like literal bookends that are trying to bite
you?
Yeah,
I got the books. Bullies? Like a piano. Yeah, bullies. Those are the ones I was talking about, the lava stage.
Butterflies? I don't know if that's really an enemy. Chuckias?
Oh, sure.
Purple things with three red dots
on them. Yes. They're in the wet, dry world.
Clams, which they took straight from Donkey Kong.
Yeah, clams.
Fire jets.
Give us the clams!
Some that look like Klepto. Why was there never a reason to bring back this Klepto? He looks like a little vulture.
He's in Majora's Mask.
Oh, that's true. They did reuse him in Majora's Mask. Yeah. he can steal your cap. He steals your cap in Mario 64. Yeah. And when he steals your cap, you can actually, like, leave the level and not get your cap back. You can play the game hatless.
What?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ah, that's interesting.
Oh, that reminds me. Like, in that same area, like, some of the other secret stars are, I think it only happens once or twice, but there's this rabbit that hops around the halls, and you have to catch the rabbit, and he just gifts you a star.
Oh, yeah?
But I chased him for a little while, but then I was like, never mind, I'll just get a star somewhere else, because he's actually kind of annoying to try to catch.
Womps look exactly like the, like an enemy in Okami.
Are you talking about, like, Womps, the thing that, like, face slam on you?
Yeah, it's just like a big,
it's a big slab.
Yeah, it's a big slab, like, and then it just falls on you. It looks like an enemy in Okami, where you would go up and hit it, and then you it would show you dots, like pressure points.
Mm.
And then you had to use your paintbrush and mark them, and then he, you know, explodes. Or if you do it wrong, they falls on your face.
I don't think I've gotten that far yet.
These sushis are zero effort, because they're essentially just sharks.
Mr. Is?
Yeah.
Which one's Mr. Is?
It's a big eyeball.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Those ones, yeah, you have to run around them in a circle, and then
they get dizzy, and
yeah, and then they die. They give you a blue coin, too. Blue coins are key if you want to go for the 100 coins in a level,
because
they give you 8 coins.
That's pretty cool. And Nagi, I think you mentioned already, the big underwater fish.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Scuttlebugs and skeeters. Some interesting, you know, enemies here, but none of these do I, like, recall being in any other games.
Nothing cool. Koopa kids don't show up. You don't get any of the Bruce Valanche looking.
Do you know anything about, like, the actual narrative of the game? Like, where does Mario 64 stand with all of these other games? I remember seeing a fun breakdown somebody did of, like, where all of these Mario games exist, and, like, who actually is his woman? Like, you know, it's always, like, about Peach and rescuing Peach, but, you know, in the earliest incarnations of the game, Peach isn't a character, it's this other woman, you know? Like, even when he's the person that he's rescuing from Donkey Kong.
It's Pauline, yeah.
Yeah, so there's this, and then it's like... There's Luigi, and it's like, what's Luigi's true character or story arc?
So here's...
Like, it's really messed up.
The narrative setup for Mario 64 is Peach invites Mario over to the castle because she has made him a cake. She herself, not one of her servants, as she is the princess. Like, no, she has made him a cake. And he shows up only
cake
to realize...
Cake is code word.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
He shows up only to realize that while she was getting the cake ready or something, Bowser has raided the castle and taken her, and there's all these different portals throughout the castle that he has to go through to collect the stars in order to get access to fight him and get her back.
She left a lot of messages, right? There's like a lot of like brief little messages that you read from her.
Not that I'm aware, but I didn't do much reading, to be honest. But my general advice when like thinking about where Mario games fall in relationships to each other, try not to give a fuck, because no one at Nintendo does.
True.
So, I was about to say, is this gonna be like Zelda where they're not gonna release an official timeline to Mario?
But even that official timeline that they released for Zelda, they even like put like an asterisk or a caveat that like this is subject to change. So they release a timeline and there's like basically, but it doesn't matter. Shut up.
It seems like...
Where does Breath of the Wild fall under this timeline?
It's the first one.
Well, from what I've seen of it, they talk about Zelda in the same way that they talk about, like... The X-Men world.
It's not
right,
the first
like,
one.
There's just lots of different alternate realities, some of which overlap and exist within each other.
Yeah.
There
yeah.
is a true chronological beginning to stuff, but then there's also, like,
you have
variants
like the,
and timelines and things like that.
You have, like, the main 616 Marvel universe, then you have the Days of Future Past universe, and you have the
seriously, where's Breath of the Wild?
Breath of the Wild,
it's a fever dream. That's not even. Like,
I don't think they've said where like the actual what you're the activities you're doing in Breath of the Wild. I don't think they've said where it happens in the timeline. But Breath of the Wild is so spread out because the things because you wake up from a 100-year suspension, so that might spread across different points in the timeline. And then the initial setup, like the creation of the divine beasts. That you're going through and restoring throughout Breath of the Wild were created like 10,000 years in the past.
Well, don't you also have
Ganon
being the male born of that race?
The Gerudo.
Yeah, the Gerudo.
But in Breath of the Wild, he's not even Ganondorf. He is just
Calamity Ganon.
Yeah, he's rage personified.
Calamity Ganon. This is a wrestling name.
But yeah, Ganondorf doesn't even make an appearance in Breath of the Wild. Spoilers, I guess, for that game, but whatever.
Oh no, it's only the greatest game ever. I was trying to find the list, but the like Tokyo Award game show or whatever, award show came out and it got Best Game of the Year.
Oh, good. The year's not over yet.
Oh, well, they did its fiscal year.
Oh,
that was the number one asked question. Why are we doing this now?
their fiscal year has ended?
Their fiscal year goes from April to April.
So
they're covering everything that happened from April 2016 to April 2017.
Okay, right. And that game came out in March, so yeah.
Yeah.
Game of the fiscal year.
It's neat.
28th of 2016
fiscal
year.
They gave a big award to Pokemon Go as well, because, you know, deservedly, it's a weird game to think of as being, Where would Pokemon Go be on the best-selling games list if you just count installs?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Mario 64 available in a variety of different places. Original cartridge for the Nintendo 64 you can grab used on Amazon for $30.
There you go.
Not too shabby. If you want the DS remake, which is a funny remake because There are four playable characters, and you sort of unlock them as you go. You actually start as Yoshi. And what happens is, when you're playing as Yoshi, or when you're playing as any character really, scattered throughout the levels are sometimes different color caps. And that will allow you to transform into the different characters. You got a red, yellow, and green cap for, of course, Mario, Luigi, and Wario. Wario is a playable character. And you eventually do unlock them, and you can switch out your characters by going to a specific room whenever you feel like, or you can just pick up a different cap. And the different characters, the power-ups are only used by one character in particular. So Mario, when he hits just the power-up button, like a power-up block in a level, will always get the wing cap. And if you're Luigi, you'll always get the invisible cap, and Wario, that leaves him with the metal cap.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to use a particular power-up in a stage, you want to be playing as that character within that stage. And they usually make it pretty easy just to if you're playing as Mario and you need to be metal, there's a Wario cap somewhere nearby. Mm-hmm. So you can switch.
What about Yoshi?
Yoshi, I don't believe he uses any particular power-up, but he can transform into any character, so he's always got everything available.
Hmm.
Yeah, kind of a strange remake.
That is very bizarre.
And it was weird because you don't have analog control on the original DS. You don't have a circle pad or an analog stick. You're using the D-pad. Or, because this game, Mario 64 DS, came out, I believe, at launch of the Nintendo DS in 2004, you could also use the touchpad with a thumb strap to control your character with the touchpad, which was awful. Just terrible. But Mario 64, the original N64 version, is also available on the Wii and Wii U virtual consoles. You can get either one there. And, you know, the Wii U is probably a really great way to play this one because you do get those restore points. That's a spend point within the game. So,
well, and I would just say, like, honestly, I literally just bought a 64. And I got a 64 with all of the components needed. I mean, it had the cartridge thing for the controller. It had the RAM expansion.
Oh, nice.
I got four games, which was Mario 64, Pilot Wings, Turok, and that Japanese baseball game for the fuck of it. And it's still, it clocked in at right about $100 for everything.
Not too shabby.
It's not a huge investment if you want to get a 64. It seems like there's a glut of them out there.
Yeah.
So, if you want to play it the traditional way, then
yeah,
hey, go for it.
Yeah, that's always an option.
That's my plan. I'm going to keep just getting the cartridges and playing.
Yeah, and you know, if you get a used, and usually when people sell like used hardware and used games, especially if you're like getting from a place like Amazon or like a little mom and pop shop.
Oh yeah, I got this all from like a secondhand video game shop here in Orlando.
They do a really great job usually these places of cleaning them and testing them, and there are a myriad of videos and stuff you can see like where you. Shows you how to like clean your N64s and your N64 cartridges. It's not complicated. Like changing the battery in your N64 cartridge, as long as you get a replacement battery, which really aren't that hard to come by.
Well, shit, there's a guy at the flea market out in Mount Dora that like has a shop there, and all he does is repair old hardware, video game hardware.
Mm-hmm.
It's really cool because like you go in there and you see him working on. He's pretty much constantly busy. Like he's got this backlog of projects where it's like someone's got this obscure thing that needs to be fixed, and like, that's what he does.
I wonder if you could fix my DS Lite. I want to get that thing fixed.
Sure, probably could. And honestly, for real, this guy seems like he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
But you got to go to Mount Dora, which is treacherous.
Well, you know, I mean, maybe if I find myself going out that way at some point. Anyway, bring it along.
The flea market out there is fucking huge, by the way. It's all really shady shit that happens there.
Oh, yeah, it's a flea market.
But man, there's some stuff.
I used to love to go to the Sandra flea market, which is a funny transition because I hated, when I was a kid, I hated going to the Sandra flea market. My parents would go every so often. We'd have to go with them, and it was hot, and we could never stay very long at the video game stores. I hated going, but now me and Dez, we used to go, you know, not often, but, you know, two, maybe three times a year, we would go out to the Sandra flea market, and of course, it's like sleazy and shady, and there's a bunch of shit, and it smells funny, and it's hot. Yeah. But, you know,
there's a handful of stores that will actually be really entertaining to go to.
Yeah.
Like this video, because it's not just that he repairs the hardware, he sells stuff there too, so you can get cartridges. Granted, he knows what he has, and he's not going to give you any steals, but
Right, right. You're not gonna, and then that's the thing about like going to these secondhand shops is you're not gonna find an Earth copy of Earthbound for $10 there. It's they're pretty aware. Mm-hmm. But the one in Sanford shut down.
Yep.
That thing's gone, which is weird because that thing had been there for.
That's really what I know. I'm sure the listener is fascinated by this,
the small business goings on of North Orlando.
Yeah, but it's called Renegers, and they actually have an indoor park. Like part of it's actually like air conditioned, so the nicer shops actually do get AC, and then the outside area is a bit more for the. I'm just selling the wares.
Yeah, which the Sanford one also had some air conditioned areas, which I'm sure is super enthralling. To everyone.
Well, but that's also
the tattoo places and the piercing places. Like, great, yes, this is where I want to get a piercing.
Absolutely. Even though it has the AC, it's also the stinkiest part.
Well, the tetanus is free.
Yeah. Oh, they reuse the needles. It's part of the. It's part of the charm. Yeah, no, but it stinks.
Come for
because,
the tattoos, stay for the hepatitis.
Yeah, that's where like they're making these shitty, greasy hamburgers and hot dogs and
stuff.
Well,
that was the best part. Like funnel cakes is like one of the only places you can get a funnel cake here.
It is pretty. You can get a funnel cake and you can get fresh squeezed lemonade.
Mm-hmm.
Totally worth it.
Yep.
You know
who's doing the squeezing?
They have
the same guy who doesn't wash his hands to give tattoos.
He's like, <"Bruh." laughs>
his hands are covered in pus.
Like, let me make sure it's still good. And he just licks it top to bottom. Bam, it's delicious.
Oh.
Tart. It's real tart. You're gonna love this.
Anyway, okay, I think we're coming up to the end here, so last chance for parting shots for Mario 64. Are we done with this hugely important game?
I guess I really feel like you clearly know a lot more about it than I do. Both of you do. Like, it's just sort of something that's been a novelty that I've been clocking.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 10, 15 hours total. Like, I'm nowhere near, I'm not doing a completionist run of this anytime soon, but...
Yeah.
It's really fun to revisit, and I think it's a good game. It holds up pretty well.
There are, we mentioned the camera. There are a few other archaic pieces here and there. Like... And we're probably going to mention this a lot during the run of the Nintendo Show 64. These games don't look great anymore.
No, I'm sure at the time you're really starstruck at the fact that you're seeing like a full 3D rendered Mario, and you're seeing him maybe for the first time, really.
Mm-hmm.
You're actually seeing something like you're looking into a mirror and you see yourself. You see, I'm not, this sounds so pretentious, you really do see something in Mario where he's not just this little pixel thing that hops around. It's like, oh, there's a real person here.
They did a great job of doing a 3D model of Mario because it's it does look the way Mario should look. I mean, to that point, Super Mario World is a nice looking Mario, but you don't really think about what he should look like in 3D at that point until you see him in Mario 64. It's like, oh yeah, that's exactly what Mario should look like.
Yeah. And like you said, like all the range of movement you have, the different acts you can perform as him, it's a lot more different. You said you listed like 6 different things you can do with him, which is just sprinting and jumping and kicking and punching. Like, he's actually kind of a real like body and human that's doing stuff. It's not like we're making him sit there and like then crouch really fast and then look up to simulate jerking off.
And of course this game is going to look and it's going to feel archaic and everything. Cause,
it feels archaic in some ways.
I mean, it's tough.
Of course the camera. But
you have your complaints and everything about it. Everybody does with this game. It's not the easiest of things to play, but it was the first one that did this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it led to the way that games are generally played today.
And you're
used to playing a game that's like this, and you're like, so smooth and everything, and then you go back to play this, of course it's going to feel just awful.
And it's a benchmark for the next 5 years to a decade. Games are going to be like, okay, we need to try to get as close to this as we can. And for the most part, most games don't really measure up. Like, mm-hmm. They get close, but they don't really nail it like Nintendo did on their first try.
Mm-hmm.
But just one other really little archaic thing. Why are there lives in this game?
Yeah.
And it's something that's going to come up until 20 years from now when we're talking about Switch games.
Yeah.
Why are they bothering? It saves every time you get a star when you beat a level. when you reset your, when you reload your save file, it automatically knocks you back down to 5 lives. Your lives don't carry over when you save.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about this.
Oh, okay. Sorry, finish. When you game over, it just saved before the last level, after the last level that you beat. You're not losing any progress.
Yeah.
Why is it even there?
I mean, I've been playing a new game that is, I guess it's supposed to be sort of like a roguelike in that it's, you die a lot. But the thing that they do, rather than giving you just some life stack that you have to worry about, is they just constantly give you a lot of save points. It's brutally difficult, segment by segment. It's a very, very tough platformer. But the fact that I can constantly just tag in at the same save spot whenever I want, and then just kind of keep going and doing it, it makes the game seem a lot easier, even though I'm sure pound for pound it is brutally difficult compared to the other platformers I've played. You know, and I think that's really the way to go about it. Don't make somebody worry about stacking lives, you know?
Right.
Just give them the save points where they, if they die, they don't feel as though they've lost all that much. Maybe they've lost whatever progress since they last saved, and that's fine. I think you can get away with that pretty easily.
And yeah, much like random battles, it's this sort of holdover from a time where the tech of the game, or the potential tech of a game hasn't really caught up with the vision of the design, so they have to find ways around it. We can't display all the enemies on the map, so we're going to make them invisible so the game doesn't have to render them, but so it's going to make it seem like the battles are random.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's something that the tech caught up with that on the Super Nintendo, and it holds over even to today. Like, lives, it's kind of a holdover from arcades. Like quarter munchers. Like, we need you to keep on paying to play this game so we can make our money.
Yeah.
And it's held over even now. It's also, in the early days of video games, it's also a way to stretch out the longevity of your game. It's going to take you a while to get through because you're going to need to master it, because once you die 5 times, you're going to get sent all the way back to the beginning of the game. So
I kind of wonder what the psychology for a gamer would be like if you just gave them two independent experiences where it's like, we're going to give you this game with a 5 stack of lives and this code that gives you 99 lives, or we're going to play the exact same game and lives just don't matter. Like, there is no life stack. If you die, you just restart. Like, that's it. I was like, what does the gamer prefer? Do they feel as though that they are just sort of progressing through something meaninglessly? Like, all I'm worried about is getting to an end game, or is it sort of like, oh, these lives have value, I have to take care of them.
Yeah, that's interesting, especially with the code aspect of it, because then you're like, ooh, I'm kind of cheating the system a little bit here.
It makes it
a little bit more tantalizing.
But even then, it makes the game seem that much, like, that it would make it seem meaningless to play the game, where it's like, okay, so any difficulty's just been removed, or it's like, that wasn't even something that should have mattered to the gamer in the first place.
Well, again, I think it depends. Like, in a game like Contra 3,
yeah,
I can understand, like, infinite lives are just going to, like, let you continue to play through a level until you finally beat it.
Yeah, you can slam your face into the wall until you're able to knock the building down.
So it's just a grind. But when the design of the game itself makes those lives obsolete, when it saves after every accomplishment that you do, what do they even exist for anymore? Because once you game over, you're just loading your save.
Mm-hmm.
So it's essentially like you have infinite lives, except it kicks you back out to a root menu.
Or you find yourself like John, who just redoes fights over and over again to max out stats in RPGs.
You have to.
Yes.
You have
I'm
to
sure.
make Gatree
I'm
good.
I'm sure you have to.
You need his speed.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. You know who I did that most with, Wes, is Oran in Radiant Dawn, because he's one of those soldier characters. You remember him? You get him when you're playing as the Dawn Brigade. You give him this little...
Yeah.
He's the soldier character that also shows up with that healer.
Yeah, the soldier was the one with the lance, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right,
yeah. Exactly, yeah. And he, his speed doesn't grow very well, so there's a lot of save and loading going on there.
Yeah, yep, definitely with that guy.
Anyway.
Oh, man, I love that Dawn Brigade.
Reading Dawn is a really good game.
So good. I was looking at that the other day, too.
At the GameStop?
No, at my house.
Oh,
I have it. So I was sitting around looking for games because I'm in a video game slump right now. I'm like, do I want to start Radiant Dawn again?
That
and then I was like, no,
game.
That's a terrible idea. That's going to take so long. There's no way I'm gonna finish that. No.
Anyway, I think it's gonna bring the show to a close.
Yeah.
Next up is the official show.
Ooh.
Yeah, we're gonna have some games to talk about.
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
After that, I'm really excited for the Pokemon show. Because Gold and Silver are out.
I'm gonna download that when I get home.
Yeah, which version did you get?
I got Gold.
What are you gonna get?
I'm gonna get Silver.
Cool. Are we gonna like talk about a run through that we're doing now, or do you guys want to start another run through? Or
no, we can talk about the one we're going through now. I mean, if you guys are planning to download, do we want to like break it up into chunks? Do we want to see how far we can get and just talk about that, or do we want to like break it up into like, oh, let's go to gym number X?
I mean, it's gonna look pretty similar. I'm definitely gonna be picking up my Flaffy as well, just like you.
Mm-hmm.
Except I'm gonna start with Cyndaquil.
Okay.
You start with Toadile, so I guess you're grabbing Chikorita.
Mm-hmm. Fine by me. I'll do that.
We can bench it pretty quick. You don't have to use a starter.
No. Yeah, like I said, I mean, I don't know if I won't play with it to the end of the game. You guys seem like you've just duped me and tricked me into playing Cyndaquil.
You can take Chikorita out back and put a shotgun to its head. And just, you know?
I mean, honestly, I would probably not be playing through the game if I had Cyndaquil, quite frankly. That's probably one. I know you guys love him, but
I do love Cyndaquil.
Cyndaquil's so good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So good.
I don't know. There's more interesting things to try with the game.
Well, why don't we go why don't we go to gym? We got like 2 weeks here. Why don't we go to gym number 4, which is in Ecruteak City? It's the Ghost Gym.
I'll try to. You know how I am.
I mean, I've put
regress so slowly.
I've put 2.5 hours into the game. I got the second badge, so it's not a huge chore. Like there's not much grinding going on here, so. It should be pretty breezy. Like, this game is pretty breezily paced. You don't get too many sections where you're going through, like, this gauntlet of trainers or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, that's enough of that.
Yep.
Till next time, everybody.
So long.
Later.